Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and co-parents of all ages, this podcast is for you. Introducing in the center ring, the amicable divorce expert, Judith Weigel.
Joining me in center ring today, we have Julie Turner. Julie was connected to me by a mutual colleague, Nona Prather, who books speakers for events. When I talked to Julie, we just hit it off. I'm just so happy, Julie, that we got to know one another. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm super glad that we got connected. And I love the idea of center ring. I like that.
Yes. So I drape everything in my circus background and I use circus metaphors. And so center ring just seems to be the perfect place to meet people. And you deserve center ring. So
I love that.
You are our featured act today.
Wonderful. I will try and do you justice.
Oh, you absolutely will. You will not let anybody down. And so just to prepare all of you for what we're going to talk about, Julie has a company called Foundations and Flow. She does three things and then more, but primarily she's a life coach, a clinical hypnotherapist, and a nutritionist. So she combines mind, body, and spirit in everything that she does. She is formerly a divorced person. So we're going to key in on that first because I found that really fascinating. And then we're going to look at all of your work and really connect that to people getting divorced because everything you do is perfect for the transformation people are in divorce. Yes?
So true.
Okay, so this is really interesting. Julie was married for 11 months. But it took 8 years to get divorced. Please fill us in.
Yes. So I was married for 11 months. A little bit of background on that. We were together for 5 years. So it's, you know, it's not that we only knew each other for the 11 months, but we were married only for 11 months. Things did significantly change on the wedding day. And then afterwards, it was, he just didn't want to release and let go. And honestly, I wasn't rushing off to get married anyways. So I just let it ride, paid for the divorce, and then just waited it out until the statute of limitations ran out.
Okay, so you're in British Columbia.
Yes, I was not at the time.
But you were in Canada, right?
Yes.
Okay, so we're definitely hearing a little bit of a Canadian accent, which I absolutely love. Do you remember the Canadians they had on South Park? Did you ever watch South Park by any chance?
I have never watched South Park, and I was called out on that the other day as well.
They made fun of Canadians. I am truly a boy child at heart. So I watch South Park and Family Guy. But they have these two Canadians that look like two talking eggheads. And they're always making fun of them. And I'm like, but wait a minute. If you've ever been to Canada, it's fabulous. What's wrong with Canadians? I didn't get it, but I still laughed.
It is fabulous here. There are some issues with Canadians. We won't get into that.
Okay, that'll be for another discussion. But you said something that is so intriguing to me, and I've always said this. When I got married and then looked back and eventually got divorced, you said things changed on the wedding day. Mm-hmm. What changed? What happened?
Well, now I always like to take ownership, and I don't want anybody to kind of mistake the fact that about what I'm about to say. Literally on the wedding day, there was how open can I be about my speech on this podcast?
Anything.
I can say anything I want.
Anything.
Okay. So as I said, we were together for 5 years. And on our wedding day, it was a very small wedding. I've never been that bride that really wanted to even have a wedding. So very small. And I walked up to him and I said, my mom wants to get a picture of us in front of this fountain over here. So let's go over there. And he said, and I won't use explicits because that's not the person that I am. He said, I don't give a beep what you or your mom want. Now that we're married, I'm not listening to a word you say. So that was my wedding day. We did consummate the marriage. We were legally married in every way, or I should have, you know, I was in my mid-20s, I guess at the time. And yeah, everything changed. But what the biggest thing that changed was my realization of who this person really was. Things were not ideal before, but they got really unideal, if that's a word.
Okay, so there's a lot to unpack here.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, my position has always been, well before I got into the divorce business, my position had always been that on a wedding day, it'll either make or break the relationship. Because there is an enormous shift when you put that legal packaging around a relationship. Yes. That'll either enhance it or detract from it. And I think people should pay attention to that because it really doesn't get better.
I would agree, and for many different reasons as well, not only the legal package, but the amount of stress that people often feel on their wedding day. Again, I wasn't even interested in getting married. I did it because I was asked. So for me, I didn't feel stressed, but he obviously did. And like I said, I like to take ownership for my own behavior and my own situation. And, you know, is he evil and rotten? No, he's not. He was afraid. He was, you know, there's all kinds of different things to unpack in his own psyche, which we don't need to do right now. But I should have known better. I shouldn't have walked down that aisle. And that is something that I don't have regrets. There was good things and there was bad things. But be aware of what is going on in your world.
Julie, you said that there were some red flags leading into the wedding day or just during the five-year relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't need you to say what they are because I too am not here to criticize anybody, but just to again take ownership of our own decision-making. Mm-hmm. And I'm fascinated with why people allow red flags to be pushed aside when we know we need to pay attention. And then we reach out for this other goal that we have that can't be attained because those red flags are going to present it. Could you speak to that, please?
Right. So that's fascinating. I was working with somebody just yesterday, and she's considering a long-term relationship with this person she's been dating. And she's saying, I'm not sure if he's the one. I don't know if he's the right one, blah, blah, blah. And the thing is that I do work in an intuitive space as well. And I said, can I be completely transparent with you? And she's like, yes. I said, I feel like you just want to get this long-term relationship under your belt so you can move on with other projects in your life. You know that this is not the right person for you. And she's like, what do you mean? I'm like, if you are second guessing it, if you were talking to somebody like me about it, it's not the right person for you. But we get this societal pressure, and we call it societal pressure. It's your own pressure. Everything that's going on in your life, society, or otherwise is happening in your own head. So you are putting pressure on yourself to take that next step, to be that next, you know, to be a wife if that's what you've always thought you needed to be. So if you are second guessing it to the extent where you're seeing somebody about it, it's not the right person for you. But our society doesn't leave space for, I think this person is lovely. I'm just going to move on though anyways. You know,
that is so hard because as we engage in a relationship, in the beginning quite often is wonderful. You know, we're in a little bit more of a euphoric state and maybe those red flags don't show up for a while. You know, when we are more relaxed, those red flags show up, or we're at least in a position of identifying mm-hmm. traits that may not comport with what makes us happy. But we do tend to overlook them because we have this greater good. And, you know, so too, maybe we came from a family that overlooked a lot. What do you think mm-hmm. about that?
Maybe not even the family. Maybe you as a child within that family had to overlook a lot because your family was not maybe as functional as your neighbor's family was. If I can reverse the red flag conversation for just a second, this is something that came up for me in another relationship down the road. And definitely, as you said, red flag. But for those of you listening right now, you know, obviously, if you're listening to a podcast on divorce, you're probably already going through it. But for next time, what happens when you start becoming somebody other than yourself? That in itself is a red flag as well. It's not the other person presenting that red flag. It's your own personality shifting and morphing to somebody you don't recognize. And that's something that happened to me within my marriage, as well as another relationship where that person's behavior, I believed, caused me to start yelling and screaming like, I that's not who I am. I'm a quiet person. I don't tend to even swear. I have better language than that. But I was doing that in these relationships. And that's what you need to recognize. The second time I recognized, I went, wait a minute, I don't like who I am right now. I'm not worried about who you are. I can't change you, but I can change me. And that was the biggest red flag that I should have recognized in my marriage, is that I was behaving in a way that wasn't acceptable to me. So whether or not I felt that person caused it, again, that's not taking responsibility for your own behaviors, knowing that when you're not acting like yourself or in a way that you appreciate about yourself, it's time to really, really look at other options.
That is so responsible. That is where we all need to be in any place in our lives,
mm-hmm.
whether it's work, right? Or in any other relationship, if we are not behaving in the way that pleases us, that is consistent with who we have been or what want to be, then yes, we do have to make change. And change is a tough thing, isn't it? It's tough.
Absolutely. And as you said, that's every relationship. We should really consider that. And sometimes that change is having a conversation. Sometimes that change is living in surrender, right? Like if it's a marriage, I don't know, obviously, this is a divorce podcast. I can probably speak freely. For me, the word forever doesn't really belong in our vocabulary. We, to me, and this is an opinion, not a fact, we have to stay in places that make sense for us when they make sense for us. And often, what made sense for us when we were 20 doesn't make sense for us when we're 60. If both of us haven't continued on our road, you know, and there's no shame in that. The people often feel such shame when they want to end something that's no longer working for them. And I'm here to tell you, there's no shame in that. That's bravery.
I agree. I really agree. And because I work in divorce, and amicable divorce, so that's my whole thrust. How do we take this event called the end of a relationship or the transition, I like that word better, the yes. transition into something else, how do we keep that as positive as possible, regardless of what's happening around us? And you said it so well, regardless of our mate, our spouse, it's really us. So it's hard enough when we have to tell our employers, you know, I've loved working for you. This has been terrific. Thank you for the opportunity. But I, for my own self and my own growth, need to move on. So we don't have that intimate component, you know, that we have in a marriage. So I know that makes it a little different. But even though I grew up Roman Catholic, and it was a while before the church, you know, allowed divorce to happen, we went from annulment to divorce. I don't practice Catholicism anymore, but it's ingrained in me. I know it. And what I try and do when people call me is say, everything's okay. It's all okay that you're both moving on. And so you're saying the same thing. When you're coaching people, I expect, even if you're coaching somebody in other life things, if they're getting divorced, it's got to come up in the conversation.
Absolutely. Or even having been divorced, because again, there is, even in this day and age, there's still so much shame in a lot of people because they didn't make that relationship work. And doing it amicably is a huge step towards releasing that shame, right? But often people don't. There's a lot of fear. I actually did a video the other day, and it was, why are people so much happier to stay in their suffering instead of actually exploring change and possibly being in pain, but possibly not? It's the unknown.
So, why? Why do we?
Well, I would say that everybody is an individual, but something that I've understood for a really long time about the human brain is that being wrong is really detrimental to the human mind, to the human psyche. So again, this is the beauty of the amicable divorce. Nobody's wrong. But if you have to have a right and a wrong, you can't be wrong. So you have to be the right. Now, if we actually remove the right and wrong from situations such as this, then it's a much safer place to go to. But we do love this person caused it. They caused the fight. They caused the divorce. Whatever the case may be, right? But if we can actually move forward to, okay, there's a disconnect here, that's fair. There's often a disconnect in life. And removing the right and wrong, so many of us, we see it on social media all the time. You know, if your opinion differs from mine, you're wrong. Not true. You're different. It doesn't have to be right or wrong. And I think if we took the right and wrong out of divorce, it would be, they'd all be amicable.
I could not agree with you more. And those are the conversations that we have here in my office when I'm mediating or filing. And that is, well, first of all, California is a no-fault divorce state. So we do not put the reason for the divorce. Thank God. So that starts it. So there's your opportunity to be amicable. But in my ongoing value-added conversations that I have with people, it's really about, it absolutely doesn't matter. Unless you have children and there's an issue with your spouse and an endangerment to the children that has to be addressed, the issues don't matter. What matters is, what have you learned? Do you have a level of self-awareness so that you can really see how to change your behavior going forward in your next relationship? Not to blame, but just to go forward and learn and grow. That's really the beauty of what this opportunity offers to people. So I couldn't agree with you more that there does not have to be a wrong. But I get what you're saying, that for the brain, because we're you know, not as developed, a lot of us, as we would like to be, I guess there's safety in somebody else being wrong.
Well, and doesn't our society teach us that? Our society kind of teaches us right and wrong, right? It's very seldom. If you look at school, if you look at, you know, even growing up in your own household, you have to apologize because you said this or whatever the case may be. There's a lot of right and wrong in our society that, you know, arguably doesn't help the situation. But the reason, another reason that we love to have that is because we wish things were different, right? And that is often a problem. That's why we get stuck in our thought processes, because we wish things were different. And that's always a downfall.
I agree. And just to share with you and everybody, I'm going through a growth period in my own life in which I am now saying how I feel. Saying how you feel does not mean you offend people.
No.
And I need to make that clear, because telling it like it is, you've heard that phrase. Mm-hmm. When Howard Stern first became mega and national, people liked Howard because he told it like it was. I said, well, there's no it. There's no universal it here. This is Howard's opinion. And in his opinion, somebody's right and somebody's wrong, although he's very funny, so people listen to him. But with me, and I think I'm representative of a lot of people, I let things go. I don't speak up sometimes in my personal life like I should. And this business has taught me to do that. So I've grown because I've had the divorce business. And for my own health recently, I've needed to do this. I've needed to speak up and very nicely say, well, you know, this actually doesn't work for me. Let me explain why. Now, is there something else that could, so I can stay in some type of business or whatever relationship, product or service outside of the business? And amazing, I'm getting a better night's sleep.
Wonderful. That is so wonderful to hear. You know, all too often we start with just like, oh, well, that's not important. And it just feels slightly uncomfortable. And then we build ourselves to being literally in the wrong relationship, whether that's romantic or work or otherwise. Now we actually can't be ourselves in that relationship, because it would blindside the person that you've essentially, you know, been remiss about telling your feelings to for who knows how long. And so we just keep burying and burying. And then when we snap, the other person's shocked. And we're like, well, you've been taking advantage of me for so long. Oh, I can't even remember what book it was, but I'm going to tell like a really brief story, because this one was like so indicative of what goes on in our minds, because our minds love to tell us stories. Husband and wife, they did not live together before they get married, and he has a TV in the bedroom. And she's like, I don't really like that, but she doesn't want to rock the boat, whatever. And he likes to fall asleep watching the TV. And she's like, oh, I have a really hard time sleeping with the TV on. He's like, well, I can't sleep without it. And she's like, okay. She doesn't say, well, I can't sleep with it. She says, okay. So they're a year into their relationship and into their marriage. And she's not sleeping well. And now she's told herself the story that he doesn't care about her. He doesn't love her. Because if he did, he'd support her. He'd want her to get a good night's sleep. But meanwhile, he's completely oblivious, because she said, okay, a year previous. And he turns the TV on and she turns it off when he falls asleep. But she's angry. She's angry about this. So when they go to counseling, and they literally have to go to counseling for this, and she says, he doesn't care about me at all. And he's blindsided. He's so confused. And she says, because he insists on listening to the TV, and I have to get up early for work, and I'm not sleeping well, and I'm tired, and all this kind of stuff. So literally, because she said, okay, instead of saying, we need something else here, like there's got to be a different way. But no, we say, okay. And then it builds into this huge story, and we make it their fault. We make them wrong.
That's right. That's right. You know, I wonder what the compromise could be on that. Did you think about that when you heard the story? I mean, that's a tough one. What's the compromise between, I need the TV to fall asleep and I can't sleep with it? Well, yes, you said she turned it off when he fell asleep, but she had to stay awake longer, I guess, to do that. I mean, that's a very interesting, typical situation.
Isn't it though? Well, they have sleep timers on TVs, so you could set a sleep timer. However, as somebody that works with the mind, you shouldn't have a TV. If you're listening right now, you should not have a TV or any other electronics in your bedroom. That is a conversation I have on a very, very regular basis. However, we're not talking about that right now. There's many reasons. Reach out if you want to know those reasons. So in this case, the reason he needed the TV is because when he was a little boy growing up, his mom worked late nights. He was at home alone and he was terrified. So his psyche needed that conversation to fall asleep. So arguably we could work on his psyche. We could set a sleep timer. There a million different things could have been done in this situation. He could have put a headset in. It wouldn't stop the light, but she could have worn a mask. Headset and a mask would have solved it. Like, there are so many things, but she just said, okay.
Yeah.
Like, you have to take ownership. And again, our minds love to tell us stories and they tend to try and keep us safe. So the story was, he is against me. I need safety. Not a true story, but the story that was told.
And don't we all do that? Don't we make up the story to accommodate the disconnect, the discord a little bit? Yeah. And we don't need to. All we have to do is be able to talk about it. And we're not given the skills in life, either when we're growing up, generally, there are exceptions to this rule, but we're not giving the communication skills, either in our families or in schools, to know how to be able to talk about a difference of opinion, a difference of behavior, especially if we want to or have to be in relationship with somebody else. And is
most
this
definitely.
What you do? Is this what you help do in your work?
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes I am very much a mediator, as you know that role terribly well. And the thing is that I will have couples, because I do work with couples as well. I work with singles or couples. I'll have couples sit down in front of me and they each say what they need to say. And they're actually saying the same thing, but they're not understanding each other's mode of communication. And that is the biggest thing that I help people do, is for some reason, and I can remember doing this for my parents when I was a very little girl, I was able to see what the person wanted to say as opposed to what they were saying. And often that is such a gift to give to people. And you know, to help them understand each other's communication skills and their own. That's the really fascinating.
And their own. Okay, I want to say one communication skill that has been a revelation to me, and that is when people talk and they want to communicate several things, they often leave off the second half of their sentences innocently. So they'll piggyback one thing to another. And what they leave off is where the gold is. Finishing the thought and finishing the sentence is where the starting point is to understanding. Do you see what I mean with that?
Absolutely.
Have you found that?
Yes, and I'm guilty of it. I'm guilty of it because one starting of a sentence leads you to a different thought and so on and so on. So there is a book called Theory of Mind, and it's by Dr. John Kappas. And in his information is inconclusive as far as I'm concerned for so many reasons. But one of the things that I learned from that book that was brilliant to me is that there is two different types of communicators. Now, there is a vast amount of different personalities and different behaviors and all that kind of stuff. But you've got to really make it generic, you've got two different types of communicators. You've got the one that loves to talk and tell you every detail. And then you've got the other that tells you the facts only, just what you need to know. And the fascinating thing, and this is so true, is that they understand in the reverse. So I'm a talker. I will give you every detail. I just told you who the author is. I told you where I got the information from. I told you all kinds of stuff that some of you don't really care about. However, if you're going to tell me something, I want the facts because I need to move on. I got stuff to do. I'm constantly in that state of flux. Whereas the opposite, the person that only tells the facts, they want every detail. They want to know why they're doing this. They want to know where it came from. They want to know everything about it. And it's so fascinating when you think about it that way. It makes you a brilliant salesperson. If that person came in telling you facts, give them detail. If that person came in giving you details, only give them facts. And it's like, then they feel understood and they can absorb the information. Fascinating. Because I so, like, you just watch somebody communicate. Sometimes difficult as a talker to be the person that gives facts when you've got another talker in front of you. But if you can do it, if you can, you know, change your conversation, that person feels understood and you can actually be heard. So it's fascinating.
Yes. And in mediation, this is exactly what happens, what you said. And that is, one could be communicating what they think is very clear, and the other person isn't understanding them at all. But I, as a mediator, I'm in the business of communication. I'm in the business of filtering what I think people mean. And my role quite often is to say, because then all of a sudden they can get in an argument. So my role when I'm listening to both people talk and I see, well, wait a minute, they're actually saying the same thing, or I can see that the way she is saying this isn't appropriate for the way he needs to receive information. Therefore, my role is to say, wait a minute, do you mind if I rephrase what you just said? And if I'm wrong, tell me I'm wrong. And then I'll rephrase it. And she, we'll just use her as an example, says, that's exactly what I meant. And then it's exactly the way he needed to hear it. Oh, okay, now we can go on. I get it. I understand now.
Right. It's brilliant. I love communication.
Communication is fascinating to me. When I talk to people about, I just want to have a show about communication only, it's they glaze over. It's so uninteresting to them. But when they're in a communication conundrum, it's they need help. And so when you can unravel that conundrum and say, can we say this a different way? And does this have the same meaning? Oh my God, how did you know that's what I meant? Because communication is fascinating. I pay attention.
Right. What can we call it instead of communication? And then people will actually buy what we're selling.
I think, you know, if we can come up with something like that, then we will truly be doing society a great turn. And then it'll be doing us a great turn because people communicate at us too, don't they?
Yes.
Okay, so here's the craziness. So I had to cut down on my political media because it was making me ill. Mm. I literally just couldn't listen. We got to this, and I think it's in most countries now, we got to this frenzied point. And as I was listening to media, I was saying, you know, you're not really, to myself, you're not really communicating what's going on. You're leaving big things out. And I don't care whether it's right, left, up, or down. That doesn't even matter. It's all the same.
Mm-hmm.
And then people are ingesting this way of communicating that they're listening to and maybe parroting back, and we're lost. We're having a hard time being calm and communicating.
Agreed. There's a large lack of critical thinking skills going on. And we do, as humans, let's face it, since we were learned language, we parroted. You know, that's what we did, is whatever our mom or dad said, that was what we said next. We parroted. So as children, we're in a state of hypnosis, essentially. And then when we're watching TV, we're in a state of hypnosis. And that's what we do. We actually take it for the gospel, for lack of a better way to put it, because it's what's gone in a state of hypnosis.
Would you expand on that, please? You stopped me in my tracks when you said that.
So as I train people, I teach people hypnotherapy. So this is something that I teach my classes right at the beginning, is that hypnosis is simply a different brainwave. It's not a magical land that people go to visit. It is simply a different brainwave. It's a slower brainwave than we are conversing in on a regular basis. So as children, we're in that slower brainwave. And then when we are adults, the ways that we enter that slower brainwave are meditation, hypnosis, TV, running, there's anything that is repetitive and we don't have to consciously think about what we're doing is a slower brainwave and we go into a state of hypnosis. Now, hypnosis is a great place to explore what's already in your mind, stored in your subconscious mind, the glorified library that we call our brain. However, it's also a good place to put in messages. And as you said, you had to remove yourself from the political discussion. Absolutely, you did. I haven't watched news or TV in years because I understand when you're in that state of zone that it goes in and you learn it like it's your thought. And that is the problem with watching the news, with watching Facebook video after video of and of course, Google is brilliant. It gives you the content that you seem to like. So you will continue to listen to the same thing over and over and over again. So whether you are, like you said, right, left, up, down, whatever the case may be, Google will start to see a pattern and give you more of that. And then it becomes truth for sure. Well, I see it every day.
I learned that on the Netflix documentary, The Social Dilemma.
Right.
Yeah, I was amazed. Julie, I'm going to go back to a little bit about divorce and something you had said to me when we met and we talked. And you said, emotionally divorce who you think you are in order to move forward.
Right.
Brilliant. Please talk about that more.
Well, divorce, of course, anything that you end, there's going to be grief. And a lot of people think that what they've got to grieve is the other person, losing the other physical person. And some do, but some people are very glad they don't even tend to like the other person anymore. However, what they're afraid to lose is who they think they are, who they feel they've become. And that is a loaded sentence in itself, who you think you are, because we aren't our behaviors. We aren't our labels. We aren't the wife. We aren't the whatever label. We aren't the business person. We are a neutral entity that takes on the behaviors that we choose to employ in that day. So if we don't emotionally separate or divorce from the wife and what that looks like, the business person and what that looks like, the perfectionist and what that looks like. If we don't emotionally remove ourselves from that, we feel such great loss, because we don't know who we are anymore. But we've always been the same person, just employing different aspects of what we've learned.
So, yes, I understand that, especially if you've been married for a long time. Mm. And the role you put on yourself is Joe's wife, mm-hmm. mom of Debbie and Sue. Maybe you've worked and, so you have that role that you've worked in. But when you get divorced, you feel like, I'm speaking for people because they've said this to me, you feel like you're on this island and you don't know the boundaries of the island and the vegetation on the island, and your role as a single person, a single mother, a single father, if you don't have another relationship waiting in the wings. And that's the fearful part, is leaving the island that you were living on with the identity that you had and going off on your own. But what you're saying is you are really the same person?
Yes. So I think we've talked about this in the past, you and I, about how we perceive ourselves as our behaviors. We all have voices in our head. That's meant with no sarcasm whatsoever. We all actually have voices in our head that we listen to. And we aren't any of those voices. We are the entity listening to the voices. So when I love the imagery of the island, that you're all of a sudden you're alone on this island. Yesterday you got up at this certain time because he went off to work at that time, and you put his coffee in the coffee mug if you hadn't started throwing it at him by this time. But you had these certain behaviors that you did. So now that they're not necessary, you feel like you've ceased to exist. And the fact is that you were never those behaviors in the first place. And this is an interesting, interesting topic that I discuss, usually pertaining to nutrition. We get very programmed from a very early age. And most of the time we get programmed to think that our natural instinct is probably wrong. So we grow up thinking everything we do, because you cry and your parents tell you not to cry. You color on the wall, your parents tell you not to color on the wall. Then you grow up and you ask your spouse a question, or you have a behavior and they don't like it, so they tell you not to do that anymore. And we just learn that we're just probably really wrong. So then something like this, which is a stage of huge change in your life when you've been married for years or even a year, and now you have to change these behaviors all over again. Well, of course you're going to believe that you don't know what to do and you don't know where to go next, because you feel that you need guidance outside of yourself, external validation as opposed to internal validation. But the fact is that you've still got that natural you inside that you stop listening to because it was inconvenient. Or it was, you know, frustrating to somebody, but that internal is still there. And that's something that is, I love to help people understand living an intuition or a heart-led life. So sometimes what's internal to us is inconvenient to other people, but there's always ways to do it diplomatically. Much like you were saying, you're learning to actually say what's going on. Sometimes it's quite comical, you know. Say morning one, you wake up and you're alone, and this is the first time you've been alone in a lot of years. You're like, oh wow, I'm alone. There's an instant inside of you, but then your mind says, why bother? Why would I do that? Why would I do this? Follow your internal, and not the mind, not the chatter, but what you want to do. And what you want to do is sometimes go back to sleep, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. You know, sometimes we just need to do that. Sometimes we need to replenish. But other times it's get up and have breakfast anyways. But the mind is like, but I'm alone and that makes me sad. But the body is like, do it. So again, listening to the reaction as opposed to the little voice in your head that's telling you a story of safety. Does that make sense?
Yes, the reaction and the satisfaction that you get from doing something that you like, from making mm-hmm. a decision, from making a choice, mm-hmm. and not worrying about what it is.
Right.
Feeding ourselves pleasure. You know, just little things that make us happy.
Yes.
I think we live by obligation, what's expected of us. And we have a whole day. I mean, maybe we do have obligations. All of us have some type of obligations. Well, unless it's picking the kids up from school so that they don't get taken by somebody else and getting them to school. I mean, those are big obligations. Fine. Other than that, you know, there are all these little decisions that we make during the day that can make us really happy if we just do it. Now, let's transfer this to the hard talk. So people are married, and it's always one person first knows that it's probably better not to be married anymore. Somebody comes to that realization first.
Yes.
And you process it and you internalize it. And you think about, okay, do I do it? Do I not do it? And one of my clients just said this to me the other day, and it was so real when he was explaining it. He said, look, I really thought about this over and over because we had a wonderful marriage for so many years, but it just decayed over time. And in this way, which is so stereotypical, the person who's making more of the money will work and work. If this is a responsible person, will work and work and work and work and work to provide for the kids, for the college, better house, you know, a better life. And that in and of itself provides the disconnect because they're not at home as much. Therefore, they're not connecting with their spouse who mm-hmm. is taking care of the kids. Maybe she works a little bit, but is primarily in charge of the house. And because you're the worker, not home as much, maybe she lets things go. And the house doesn't look so great when you get home. And, you know, all these little things start to make it go, you know, the marriage decay, as I said. And then he was saying that he was processing at work, just what do I do? He was unhappy. And his coworkers were coming up to him saying, man, you don't look like yourself. Are you okay? And instead of putting on the happy face, oh yeah, you know, wow, it'll just pass. It's fine. He finally said, I'm actually not okay. I'm actually getting sick. My emotions are making me ill.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the day he said, I may have alluded to divorce in the past, but that day I said, I'm starting to make plans now. This isn't working for either of us. And she took it seriously for the first time. But it was over. And right. This is something that's very interesting. And it happened to me in my own divorce. We had issues, both of us, you know, I'll just say equal, different and equal. He presented the divorce to me. I accepted it. I didn't try and get it back. I was shocked, but it didn't matter. This is what you want. This is what I'll do. And so I worked on myself. He worked on him. I mean, this other person, my client, worked on himself and got, so you get yourself to a place of acceptance. And now I can go on. Okay. It's not what I wanted, but it's okay. Now I'm fine. The other person wants you back. My former husband wanted me back. And I'm like, I can't. I'm now in another place. This cannot be unusual.
No.
So what happens when you make that emotional turn? Now you're on a different street. What do you do?
Right. So this is like a huge, huge topic because that happens often. That happens often. And sometimes people do try again. Some people absolutely do. But we are all individuals. And that is the... that is a thing that often we forget, that as human beings, we're all individuals. We like to follow a program like, oh, if you do this, then next step is this. And, you know, I'm sure that your ex probably thought, okay, well, this just makes sense. Look, we've worked on each other and we can come back together and be together, but that wasn't going to work for you. And maybe for somebody else, it would have worked. But there's always a reason that we end up breaking up, divorcing, whatever the case may be in the first place. And there's no rule. I don't believe in steadfast rules, but really think long and hard if you're going to get back together with somebody that you had to make that painful decision to divorce in the first place. Are you going to have to make that decision again? Coming from a child whose parents married each other twice. I hadn't even thought about that.
Forgot about that. You mentioned that. Could you say that, please? And did it work out the second time? Did they stay married?
No. My parents divorced each other twice. So they married each other twice. They married quite young, like 20 and 21, I believe. And then they married again in their late 40s. And the first marriage lasted 18 years. The second one lasted 6 months. So it's like, you fundamentally are still the same people. Even though we grow and people can grow, I would say, like I said, remove the behaviors. You're still the same person inside there, good or bad. And there is no bad. There's no shadow. So those of you out there are like, oh, I have all these negative things. Your shadow, that's a shadow to one person, is a blessing to another. Always remember that, that your ex-spouse's least favorite thing about you might be your new spouse's favorite thing about you. So there's no reason to hide any parts of you. Just be true to you and you will end up with the right person. So yes, my parents did the wrong thing twice. And they both admitted that, like, they shouldn't have been married in the first place.
Why do you think they decided to remarry? What was the impetus?
Habit. I think that's the reason that a lot of people do. It's like, okay, so financially as well. Even if you've gone through the expense of a divorce, you still remember the days where you had maybe that dual income, or maybe just having that person take care of things on the home front while you went to work helped you because you didn't have to hire the maid. You didn't have to get the babysitter, you know, all these different things, right? So I think financially, we're very driven financially, especially in North America. I actually read an article once, and it was, I can't remember where the author had come from, but she had moved to Canada, to BC in specifically. Vancouver is the most expensive place in Canada to live. And she said, to find a desirable relationship in Vancouver, you have to think from financial end of things. And she had never experienced that. She, you know, people get together so they can share expenses, not so that they can build a beautiful life. They see it as building a beautiful life because they want the same things, but from an actual material point of view. And that fascinated me when I read that, because I'm like, that is so true. People expedite their relationship because it's like, you know what? We're both paying rent. Let's get together and pay the same.
Yeah.
So financially, I think drives a lot of marriages. Good or bad. I'm not here to judge that. Nothing wrong with wanting an easier life, whatever that looks like.
Absolutely. It's very aristocratic. They're the very, very, very wealthy combined their wealth and mm-hmm. became these families, these titans of wealth. You know, the one thing I wanted to comment on in all of this that you said is, I think sometimes if people remarry, it's because they remember the good times and forget about what didn't work. But I wanted to extend that into, if you're not going to remarry and you're going through divorce right now, it's okay to remember that you had good times.
Yes.
This goes back to making the other person wrong. You can have excellent times in that marriage, but it just doesn't make sense going forward.
Right. I would argue that that's even a good thing to reflect on. Even if you are so mad at your ex right now, just reflect on what your favorite things about the relationship were. It helps you lose that stress, that anxiety, that pit in the stomach, or the burn in your chest, whatever the case may be. Because guess what, people? You're the one feeling that. You can be as angry as you like at your ex-spouse and they don't feel it. You feel it. So if you can reflect on the good things and actually change the physical feeling that you have in your body when you think about them, you're the one who wins. You win on that one, not them. Again, they don't get to feel your good feelings either, just so you know. If you're like, they don't deserve that, it's not them that's feeling it anyways. It's you. So it's not a bad thing to reflect on your favorite things.
Yeah, I think that's important too, because it goes towards forgiveness. Mm-hmm. I mean, forgiveness, of course, we've all heard, is for us. It's for the person forgiving. It's not to let anybody else off the hook. It's to release these negative, angry, resentful feelings, because Maya Angelou, I keep quoting her, said that on a good day, we always do our best, and on a good day, our best may not be that good. We're all human. You know, we can all misbehave. And so to forgive releases us from anxiety, depression, grief, anger, and all these things anchor us and hold us down in a very bad space.
For sure. I think it was actually Lily Tomlin, of all people, that said, forgiveness is the understanding that you can't have a better past. That's all it is. just understand you can't have a better past. I love that statement. And it is so true, because you can forgive. And it doesn't mean that you think whatever it was is okay. You don't have to agree with it, but just understand you cannot have a better past. And that's what forgiveness is.
And then forgiveness elevates you. Mm-hmm. It gives you more energy, and it can make you happier. I want to finish with something else that you had said when we were initially talking that I like. You said you believe in partnership, mm-hmm. whether it's business partnership or personal partnership. You believe in partnership. I guess it makes us healthier. Talk about that a little bit, because people who are the marrying kind will jump back into another relationship rather quickly. Mm-hmm. And so what are the dangers in that too? It's a two-part question, I guess.
So yes, I absolutely think that as humans, you know, if you look at the numbers, 7,800,000,000 people on this planet, obviously we're not supposed to do everything on our own. So partnership, teams, families, communities, you know, it used to be we were born to a village and we stayed in that village. Now we don't. And that is part of the issue, is that we remove ourselves from where we, air quote, belong, and we have to find a new community, a new partnership, a new family, so to speak. But that's what we're meant to do, because we all have our strengths. Now, whether this is a romantic relationship or a business relationship, you're bringing certain strengths to the situation. And you don't have to be everything to everyone. Now, the issue with jumping into a new relationship simply because you're alone, partnership shouldn't be about loneliness. It should be about support. To be able to mutually support each other, not because you're lonely, but because, again, you have strengths that maybe this other person doesn't have, and similar strengths as well. But there'll be certain things that it's like, oh my goodness. One of my clients, one time, he told me that him and his wife, and he was still married, I don't always deal with people that are divorced or divorcing by any means, he said that they had pink jobs, blue jobs, and green jobs. And emotionally, we need to have that. So pink jobs are things she's just better at and likes doing. And blue jobs are things that he was just better at and liked doing. And then you got green jobs that you just hire somebody else out for. So again, imagine that as, you know, three different people that are in a team. Again, this is not about divorce. Although, you know, polyamory is something that exists. So, you know, maybe that's where you get your pink, blue, and green from. But from a marriage point of view, just look for people that you know, can support you in what you don't feel you want to do, maybe, or that you're good at.
What do you look for? Now, you're in a relationship, right? So what did you look for that connected you to your current relationship?
So that's interesting, because my current relationship, which has been phenomenal, was not a relationship that I wanted to get into. He actually convinced me. He was very, very sure of himself and very stubborn and stuck with it. But I was looking for somebody I could build with. I wanted that partner in every sense. I wanted a business partner and a life partner, and I wanted to build something together. And you know, because of what I do, I wanted them to be in the mental, emotional space as well. Well, my partner is a heavy equipment operator and an adventure guide, so he's not in that space whatsoever. But he helps me focus. I would be every day doing 800 different things, and again, not finishing my sentences, as we talked about. And he listened to what I wanted in my life and then holds me accountable to my own wants and needs. That's one of my favorite things about him. He's also extremely loving and giving, but that's just an aside. My favorite thing was when I was telling him about what had happened in my day, and I had said, you know, this person came at me with this opportunity. I do media hosting, and they wanted me to host a platform that was about shopping. And he's like, oh, well, does that help you change the way society looks at preventative medicine, which is what I desperately want? And I'm like, no. And he's like, seems like that's not really the way you want to go then, is it? And I'm like, no. But he was so right. And I would never have caught that. I just was like, ooh, something else that I can, that somebody said I'd be good at, right? So I am the quintessential shiny thing, shiny object syndrome. And he's not. He's very steadfast. And as much as I didn't realize I was looking for steadfast, I wanted somebody to help me build. And guess what? He helps me build, just in a different way. So having that mindset of, I want somebody that helps me build, was brilliant. My visualization of what that looked like was so far off what I have. And I'm so grateful that he was as steadfast as he is, so he could bring me around.
So your advice to people listening then would be what?
Have an idea of what you want, absolutely, or maybe what you need, what's missing in your personality to get what you want to get out of life, and then be open-minded about what it looks like.
Yes. Yes, yes, and yes. I think we're all guilty of that. I think it's just so easy to fall into the visualization of what it looks like. The first step, I agree with you, has to be, well, what is it that you want that will enhance your life? Mm. What do you need in your personal life, in your work, whatever it is, and then allow it to be whatever it looks like. Just be open to opportunity and connection.
Yes, and recognize it. So as I said, he was very stubborn and he stuck with me. And I can remember the exact moment like that I had that click inside of me, like this person will actually help me achieve, you know, and not because they're my biggest cheerleader, but because they listened. They knew what I wanted, which that in itself is a gift. Who do we have that actually listens to us?
I have one really good friend who's also a professional colleague. She was married for 8 glorious years and he passed away. They did not get divorced. He passed away. And she says over and over when she talks about him and I ask questions about what it was like, because I never met him, she always says he listened.
Right.
He listened to her unlike anybody else had ever listened to her and gave her back what she needed, which pleased him to do that. And then he enhanced her life by other things that he brought to the table, which brings me, I thought this was the end, but it's really not. One more thing. So here's the real end, because I really want to get to this. Two things combined. You said it's difficult to be in a position not to be you,
yes,
choosing to be other than you are. With that, don't wish things that were different. This goes back to divorce. Don't wish things that were different. Stay present to what they are. And I'm assuming work within that reality.
Right.
Extend that just a little bit, please.
Actually, those two marry together so sensibly. So thank you for bringing them up together. Because that's what we do, is we try and manipulate the situation. So I did a video called No More Mr. Nice Guy. And that No More Mr. Nice Guy was actually about stop being the people pleaser. Stop trying to give away pieces of yourself, thinking that will control the situation. And we don't outwardly think that we're trying to control. We think we're, you know, we don't want to be rejected. We don't want to cause a fuss. But what we're trying to do is control the situation, i.e. wishing things were different. So we don't say something when we need to say it. And we hope that will lead to a better future. that will lead to something different happening. And we have to stop wishing things were different, realize that the things are as they are, and stay present with that. Speak to that situation right then and there.
I learn every time I talk with you. I just think you're brilliant and wonderful and so very nice. In this age of Zoom, you can work with anybody, anywhere, I guess, as long as you can communicate and speak the same language.
Absolutely.
It'll be in the show notes, but how do people get in touch with you, Julie?
The easiest way is just go to julieturner.ca, and there is every type of social media, email address, phone number, location that you could ever want on julieturner.ca.
And I do think people should go to you. I mean, I've just enjoyed knowing you for the brief time that we have, and I know it's going to continue. Thank you. Thank you for your time and your thoughts and who you are. I really appreciate this.
Thank you, as do I.
And I thank all of you for listening every single week. Please go to my website, theamicabledivorceexpert.com. Give me any comments that you like, any ideas for shows. I will listen, and you can contact me for one-on-one discussion as well. So that, and you know what I say when I close, as always, have an amicable day.
That's our show for today. Thank you for joining us. Be good to yourselves, be kind to your spouse, and cherish your children above all else.